Welcome to the Scale Savvy Podcast with your host, Aaron Matthew. Dive into the journeys of business owners scaling their dreams into reality. We're talking big wins, real challenges, and the raw truths of growing a great company. Whether you're pushing to the next level or plotting your course, Scale Savvy is your go-to for all things growth. Fasten your seatbelts. It's time to get savvy, get inspired, and get scaling. Here's Aaron.
Welcome, savvy entrepreneurs, to the Scale Savvy Podcast, the show where we dive in deep into the roller coaster that it is to scaling and growing a business that we all are facing. I'm your host, Aaron Matthey, and each week we're here to really just unravel the mysteries and share the victories and tackle the challenges that it comes with taking your business to the new heights. And we like to talk not just about the success stories, but also about the real challenges and what we can learn from people that have been in the same place as you. Today, I'm so excited to have with us Brian Hassan from Wayfinder Moving. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Thanks for having me, Aaron.
Yeah, I'm so excited to get to talk with Brian. I've known Brian for quite a few years here, and he is just an expert at being able to dive in and figure out how to make, he runs a moving company, and he is an expert at figuring out how to make that move as smooth as possible. And I love the way that he's invested into his team and into his systems as he's looking at that growth. So I think he's the perfect person to share with you today. So I'm excited to have you here.
Yeah, absolutely. This should be fun.
Yeah. So one thing I always like to talk about is about your origin story. I think you probably didn't grow up, you know, as a 10-year-old thinking, when I grow up, I want to own moving companies. That's going to be my job. So tell us a little bit about how you got into what you do, Brian.
Yeah, this industry is weird because you're either born into it or you trip and fall into it, right? So, because like you said, nobody grows up wanting to be a mover. And so I was actually a high school business teacher. And I was in a more difficult school district and wasn't super happy doing what I was doing. I loved the coaching and some of the side stuff, but the day-to-day in the classroom, I had decided I wasn't really enjoying. So I also at that point had been buying up apartment houses and things. And I just decided that I would quit and run the, you know, apartment buildings and stuff. And we had houses. So we had maybe 10, 12 units, something like that. So it wasn't enough to support me, but I was like, I need to do something different here. And then, you know, people would move out and leave their stuff. So I had this idea of a junk hauling business. And I had watched this thing. I couldn't sleep one night, watched 1-800 or how they made their millions. I saw a thing on 1-800 Got Junk. And I was like, I could do that tomorrow. And went and bought a trailer the next day and started junk hauling, and had to explain to my mom with an MBA why I quit my teaching job and started a junk hauling business.
I love it.
But I saw it as something that was scalable. And I wouldn't have to be on the truck for long. Long story short, we lived in a very small market at the time, and there wasn't enough work to keep me and an employee busy. So we started delivering furniture for a store, and then it was six stores, and then it turned into moving. So I probably think that's about as short as I can make it, but we moved one person because they asked us, and overnight the phone started ringing about moving services, and the revenue we were getting for that was much better, and the work conditions were slightly better too. So next thing I know, I'm a mover.
I love that. So tell me a little bit about just in those early days. So part of those early challenges, what's like a big roadblock that you faced in moving from the junk company to transitioning all the way to a full-fledged moving company? What are some of those roadblocks that you faced and how you got past them?
Well, the first employee was part-time, and I remember this is years ago, but I remember guaranteeing him like 20 hours a week so he wouldn't go find another job. And a couple of those winters, I invited him over to play Madden with me because, you know, video games. We had nothing else to do. So I think one thing that was really interesting that made the transition easier that was unexpected is I was the guy that, you know, was answering the phone, going on the jobs, doing everything. And everybody wanted to always haggle price with me. And it was super frustrating. And the second I had somebody else start answering the phone, now we were just cogs in the machine, and nobody knew I was the owner necessarily. And so people stopped badgering about price negotiations. It was really weird.
Oh, that is interesting.
Yes.
That was interesting. So the person on the phone, were they doing the sales?
Not necessarily sales, just at the time with the junk hauling and maybe the moving, because we still didn't know what we were doing, but it was just having somebody answering the phone, finding out what they needed and scheduling the appointment. So yeah, I guess loosely sales, but yeah. So it really changed the dynamic for us at that point. That was an absolute, I remember that as a change point for us.
Awesome. That's fascinating. I think so many times with consistency, I haven't heard that one before, where hiring an employee helps to separate the owner from the customer, even though you were involved later on in the process. I think that's interesting that helped give that perspective of we are a full-fledged legitimate company, and they didn't necessarily know that you were the owner. That's pretty cool.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then it was, okay, now how do we merge being a junk hauling company and a moving company? Because you don't necessarily want the customer to know that those are being mixed. And we had different equipment and stuff, but you know, you couldn't send a guy in a junk hauling job in the morning and a move in the afternoon. So we had some challenges there. And as we grew bigger as a mover, we eventually eliminated the junk hauling side of the business just because it was too hard to keep mixed, but it got us there. So that was good.
Awesome. I love that. So tell me a little bit about what you're working on right now. What are your projects and goals that you're working towards?
We right now, because our industry is in a little bit of a contraction period and shrinking, I will say Wayfinder's actually still been able to grow in a time where most moving companies have retracted 10 to 30%. But that growth rate for us has really slowed down. So in a time of retraction, you know, we want to be really conscious of our overhead, and it's a really good time to slow down and get efficient and take a look at our processes and make sure that we're merging them together and that we're building that consistency of holding people accountable to them and making sure that we really ingrain the things we want to while we're a little slower.
Yeah, I think that's so important. I hear entrepreneurs a lot ask these questions about, well, what do I do with my people during the slow season? You know, and moving definitely has its busy season and its slow season.
For sure.
But then in this time too, where it's so dependent on the economy, where there's not as many people moving, not as many homes for sale, then that is definitely a time to be able to look at your people and the processes. I think it's such a great time to reinvest and to look at, you know, okay, we're adjusting these processes. Do we have the right people that are going to fulfill those processes? Not, and if not, you know, you've got some flexibility to start looking at how do we plug the right people in that are willing to follow those processes. So great job. Yeah. I think it's a great time to be able to focus on those when things get a little bit slower. I know you guys are still growing, but when that growth is in a more manageable phase, I think it's a great time to take a look at that.
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome. So in our pre-show interview, we were talking a little bit about a recent acquisition that you made. Can you tell us a little bit about how you guys have grown through acquisition and some of the challenges that have come with blending those people and those processes?
Yeah, this one was a big one. We've bought, I don't know, I've bought three or four moving companies, or at least their phone numbers or some of their assets over the years. But it's been minor things. This time, you know, we're in Buffalo, New York, and we purchased a moving company from a friend in the Seattle, Washington area. So big, long distance, you know, far away. But important to that is we have a great GM there that helps us with things. And I think it's been interesting. It's been good. It's been bad. It's, you know, been in between. It's been interesting to see, okay, this company's been established for over 20 years. We've been established for a long time. Now it's like, we both have our separate ways of doing things. And we, as we talked about, you know, people in this industry feel like there's only one right way to do things, which is not the case. So trying to get two separate parties to, for efficiency's sake, agree on the same process for doing something takes a little bit of work.
Yeah. So it's not, is it the right way or the wrong way? It's trying to find what's the Wayfinder way, right?
Yes.
How are you going to put those together? So in looking at those, I've seen people come about that merging of processes and merging of culture in a couple of different ways. Tell me a little bit about how you guys have tried to tackle that.
One of the big things that started that we started with was merging our CRM. So we had one, they had a different one that they needed to replace either way. So bringing us under the same CRM, that was helpful. And with other operational processes, maybe, you know, how we load a truck or how we go about this, or, you know, how paperwork's done, or what the workflow is for certain things, you know, that's kind of, okay, let's bring the parties that use these processes or perform these duties. Let's put them in the same room or over the same video conference.
Yeah.
Let's kind of lay out how each person does said process, agree to the strengths and weaknesses on both sides of that, and then come up with a new process that kind of takes the best of both worlds. And it is something that we can all agree is a good way to go about it.
Awesome. I love that. I think there's something magical that happens when you start mapping out processes and they get visual, that suddenly it becomes very clear. Oh, here's the pain point here. Here's where we're struggling with this. I love a good process map for that reason, and to identify what those pain points are. Another thing I love that you did there, Brian, was to say the people that create the process are more likely to follow the process.
Yes.
And so when you've got two people that are coming together and having a good understanding of here's the way I do it, here's the way you do it, here's where my admitted weaknesses are, and here's where I think my strengths are, when they can come together and be a part of building that together, they're much more likely to follow that process.
Yeah. And we've definitely seen that, where if we put a process or a procedure in front of somebody and they haven't walked through the process of developing it, and not all the time, but it's kind of like, well, why would we do it this way? Why don't we do it this way? But they're looking at it from their narrow point of reference of what's affecting them and not what's affecting the whole organization. And so when we've brought people into the same room and we're kind of hashing out all the stakeholders in that process, now they understand why, and it seems to be a lot easier. And we've taken their input. It's not me telling you what to do. It's you telling me what works best for you.
Yeah.
That seemed to work a lot better for us.
That's so smart. Those people with the boots on the ground have some of the best ideas about how to improve process. Oh, yeah. My favorite two questions that I tell all of my clients to start asking at their team meetings are, how can we be more profitable, and how can we be more efficient? And when you start asking your team those questions on a regular basis, they have some of the best boots on the ground ideas for how to make things work better.
Yeah,
I love that.
Absolutely. And I've been on the trucks, you know, a lot, and I'm not anymore. And, you know, I tell these guys all the time, like, you're way better at your job than I am. So like, you need to help me.
Yeah. So. Yes. When they do that undercover boss, I love that show, where sometimes I think it's, you've done all of the jobs. So I love that you've been like, no, I've been the guy loading the truck. I've been the guy, you know, that's, you know, running invoices, and I've done all the different pieces. Mm-hmm. I think it's fascinating when some CEOs are coming in and they've never actually done all of the jobs, you know.
Yeah,
I think that would be so hard to get started with. But I love that you have some perspective of, oh, and I remember what that was like. Yes. That's helpful too with those processes.
Yep. I don't want to know again either.
Yeah.
I'd rather stay off the truck.
Yeah. Back's age. I don't think anybody wants to be a mover of furniture forever. Eventually, the weight of the couch and the back are not compatible anymore at some point.
No. And I have spinal fusion surgery in 2 weeks. So it has caught up to me.
So I didn't know that level of the back fusion pain. So
Yeah. So, but we're doing all right. We're doing all right.
Oh, good. Well, I think even when teams are a part of the change, and which I think you've done a great job of setting them up for success by letting them be a part of that, old habits are hard to change.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that all business owners face is, okay, we figured out how to fix this problem. We've looked at it. We've come up with solutions. We've identified a new process or a new software. And then the team's like, okay, yeah, I see that. I see that this is going to work and it's going to be great. And they jump in for the process for a couple of months. And then oftentimes what we see is then employees start falling back into old habits.
And I would say that is absolutely our biggest pain point, is we can get it in there. We can get it established. And then I go out of town for a week, or that the manager of that process is gone, or we get super busy and things fall by the wayside, and all of a sudden we're back to where we were.
So tell me a little bit about what you've tried to overcome that accountability gap.
Well, one thing is I tried to hire a COO that kind of was really a process-oriented person and to manage those processes for us. And it really didn't work out how we wanted it to from that aspect. I think it's a little bit more difficult than I was anticipating it to be on that side. We've tried to set up metrics and different things like that to manage that. And I think what I'm discovering too is that I have ADD. I'm a great entrepreneur. I'm the firefighter. You know, I'm the guy that can get problems solved, but I am not the consistent manager, you know? And so I feel like I need to kind of step outside of myself and find somebody that really will help us manage all of our processes and make sure we hold people accountable. I haven't quite figured that part out yet.
Got it. Yeah, it definitely takes a different personality type. I think that the visionary is not usually the best one to be the integrator of the process. Those are typically two different people. Some things that I've seen other people do longer term to help hold people accountable is if there are metrics that you can track that are automatically, if there are data points that are automatically being handled in the system, it makes it much easier for you to pull those accountability numbers. I think sometimes if your CRM can be able to track, hey, what's our percentage of times that people are filling out this contract? Or, you know, if there's something that you can build into the system so that it can pull that data automatically to check accountability, it's much easier for those for managers to be able to manage it.
Yeah.
There are some pieces that are harder to do that way, like scripting, for example, but it's building a process of accountability and helping people, you know, wean off from that accountability, right? So initially, that's where the challenge lies, I think, is figuring out how do we get the team excited and invested, which I think you've done a great job with. And then how do we maintain that consistency? Some of the best tools that we've seen for that are building scorecards, which sounds like you guys started on some of those scorecards for those process changes.
But don't have them.
So
that's a good one.
Yeah, that's a great one. I'm a firm believer in every team has a number, every position has a number, right? And so if it's, you know, we need you to do this 3 times, or we need you to get 80% of the, you know, 80% of the time it should be closing, or figuring out what the number is that's related to that process and identifying what does success look like for that process and helping them to be accountable to that. And then you can start with accountability for that. You know, initially we're talking about it daily and helping to problem solve that, right? And then slowly weaning off. But if it's to maintain longevity, that scorecard I think is really vital. Even if the frequency that scorecard is being checked moves from a weekly thing to a monthly thing or a quarterly thing, but continuing to do that. Another way that I've seen accountability continue long term is in team meetings. So in team meetings, going back and addressing the processes again and helping them remember the why, remember why we're doing it this way. Because I think oftentimes I'm not a golfer, but I love listening to stories of golfers, but oh no, I'm now going to have a bunch of people calling me and telling me their golf stories. So maybe that's not what I wanted to say, but I think, you know, in some places when we're starting to do something and we hear from an expert or we're trying to adapt to a new process, it feels super awkward at first, right? Yeah. That change feels awkward. And even if it's better, it still feels wrong. And it takes some time to get into that space of like, no, this feels right now. And so I think as we're talking about making big changes in teams, and I think holding those team meetings and saying, I know that this feels awkward. The muscle memory is not there for it, you know?
It's waking up and brushing your teeth with your opposite hand.
Yeah.
It's difficult. Yeah.
It is difficult. Yes. Awkward. And so I think it's important to help them remember on a regular basis, here's why we're doing it. Here's some ways we found to make it less awkward. And then also kind of gamifying the implementation of the new process, right? That's another fun way that I've seen some teams roll out some of those big changes.
Yeah.
Is to gamify it, you know, prizes and, you know, a $25 gift gift certificate to Cold Stone can go farther than you think.
Yes.
Because they're fighting for the ice cream. But I think that there's some fun ways to be able to address it and helping the team know we are embracing the awkward. We know it's going to be awkward and we're just going to get our arms around it until it feels more comfortable.
Yeah. No, I like that. I like that.
Awesome. Well, I so appreciate your openness and you sharing your expertise of how you've seen these changes of scaling and merging teams together and pushing through those slow times. Can you share with us how our listeners can best connect with you?
A couple of ways. LinkedIn, Brian Hassan. If you search for me on LinkedIn, see the smiling face, you'll find me. And then also, if you search the Movers Resource Guide podcast on YouTube, we do have a industry related podcast ourselves. So that would be a great way to connect with us.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Brian. And there you have it. Another insightful episode full of strategies and stories and live systems challenges. And we hope that all of you listeners are feeling inspired to start tackling more of your own scaling adventures. And remember, it's not just about, you know, building that optimized business. It's also about the whole journey that it takes to get there and embracing those challenges and setbacks and celebrating the wins and the milestones as we go along that journey. So thank you so much to our guests and our dedicated listeners. Your support means the world to us. And if you enjoyed today's episode, we don't forget to subscribe and to leave a review and to share with some other fellow entrepreneurs who are on their own scaling quest. And let's keep scaling and stay savvy. And remember that the best is yet to come. Until next time, I'm Erin Mathey.
Thank you for tuning in to the Scale Savvy Podcast, navigating small business growth. Remember, the path to success is within reach. Stay savvy and keep scaling.